Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special bonus episode of Decoding TV. This episode is called Decoding Decoding TV. Typically, on Decoding TV, four bonus episodes. What we've done is we've compared the TV shows that we're covering to the source material. So in the case of House of the Dragon, we compared it to the book that it's based on. In the case of The Last of Us, we compared it to the video game. Well, of course, that does not exist for Succession. And so I was thinking to myself, what can we do for the bonus episodes for Decoding TV during this season of Succession? And I decided that a great way to approach this was by inviting someone on who is a media expert to talk to us about how realistic the events of Succession are. Also, he can yell at me about the things that I got wrong during the main episode. David Cho is a media veteran. He's also friend, assistant, and advisor in his past life. And he has previously been
not in the carry way in the show.
But he's previously been the publisher of sites such as Grantland, 538, and The All. His expertise is highly valued by media companies, celebrities, global brands, and I'm so pleased he's sharing it with us here on Decoding TV. David Cho, welcome to Decoding TV.
No, I pitch this to you as and I'm sure I'm not alone in this. A lot of people just kind of like when they're listening is kind of like yelling at their phone, being like, but what about this? And I want to be an advocate for the listener. I want to be the ombudsman.
He's the audience surrogate. Like when people are listening to David Chen talk on Decoding TV and they're screaming in their car, David Cho can be your voice. And this is that opportunity. So,
and these are things I normally text you one-on-one when I'm listening to the podcast you do, but in this case, we're recording it. And I want to stress, like, I think you and Kim did such a good job in the first episode and in the preview episode. I thought they were really great, but there are just some things where it's like, oh, here is some nuance that I think I can add to sort of what's happening on screen and some things that, you know, my point of view might hopefully be helpful in.
Right. And I greatly appreciate that. I do want to call out that, of course, you can always email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. And the way this will work is this episode is obviously free for everyone. But hopefully, David Cho and I will do bonus episodes throughout the season. Not necessarily every week, but whenever we have time. And those will be available only to paid members at decodingtv.com. So if you enjoyed this episode, help support the podcast. Become a paid member at decodingtv.com. You'll get all of my work with David Cho covering Succession this season.
That not every week really sounded like a soft firing before we got started, Dave.
Indeed.
I do respect you trying to build your own ATN out here. You're trying to get your Logan Roy on, but without the cruise ships.
This is Decoding TV is my version of the 100, David Cho. So David Cho, what are some things that you heard in our conversation about Succession Episode 1 that you kind of want to correct or tweak or comment on?
I guess the first thing is something that you said to me just one-on-one, where you said, the reason I want to do a podcast with you is because you're the only person I know that doesn't hate rich people because they're rich.
Yeah. And, not the only person, but here's what I'm going to say, David Cho. I think that if you are a media person watching Succession, which is most of the people I know and would podcast with, you are going to have an attitude towards the media overlords. Or you're likely to have a specific opinion about the media overlords as depicted in the show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Most of the people who I would want to work with are probably inclined to see the Roys as kind of an oppressor, which I don't necessarily think is a inaccurate position.
Well, I think a testament to what the show does really well is just that, like, they present them in a really balanced way. And it's like, you know, they sort of like, as good as someone is, there's always something bad about them. And for the most part, there's no one that feels too exaggerated in one way, shape, or the other. Even like Logan, who you could say is the worst person on the show, has redeeming qualities. I mean, depending on how you look at wealth, but like the fact that he started from nothing, was an immigrant who moved from, you know, the UK to Canada or whatever, and then just somehow built this massive media empire, for all intents and purposes, is sort of an admirable thing. Like, obviously, a lot of things he's done on his way to get there. And if he is Rupert Murdoch, there's like, he's literally the responsible for like some of the most horrible things that happen. But it's like, you know, even Logan has something redeeming about him. And even someone like his brother, Ewan, or whatever Ewan is, like, someone like him also has massive flaws, because he is a person who sits on $250 billion of wealth, or whatever it is, or $250 million of wealth. And like, they don't present it as like the virtuous people are great and the rich people are bad, but they present everything with a certain level of nuance. And I think that's what is probably the most interesting thing for my show. And like, I think the general sentiment, like, many, many rich people are awful, I do think is fair, and I think they do a lot of really deplorable things. But I just think the balance in it is really compelling.
One of the things you pointed out to me during a possible alternate recording of this episode is that there's no real person to root for in the show. Like, there's no one who is without sin in the show. There's no like purely good person in the show, really.
Well, I think when we're in the time of like the anti-hero, whether it's like, you know, the Tony Soprano, Don Draper, Walter White, you know, it's like that character doesn't exist here. And conversely, like a Skyler White doesn't exist. You know, it's like you don't have these people that are like, oh, this is the person that we're going to be behind.
I would say Logan is pretty close to a Walter White, you know.
Think Logan's a Walter White? I don't think most people are rooting for Logan. I think most people are rooting for Shiv. Many people are rooting for Kendall.
That's fair. I saw my co-host Kim pointed out a TikTok to me where somebody was talking about how they would speak about the Succession characters on Twitter versus how they'd talk about them if they knew them in real life, right? Like, and on Twitter, it's like, slay, queen, you know, go get them, Shiv. Shiv's such an amazing girl boss, you know, like, and in real life, you'd be like, that is a fucking sociopath, you know, like, and so
also Shiv out here literally like confronting women who have been through trauma to not testify against her company just so that her company wins. It's like Shiv is a monster,
right? Exactly. But it is interesting, kind of the is dichotomy the right word? Basically, the contrast in how people talk about these characters online versus like whether or not these characters are actually people you'd want to root for. And that is kind of interesting. You know, I think there's a wide spectrum of opinion on how people feel about the characters and whether they should root for them. That's how I feel about it. You know?
Well, I think there's also just like you pointed out something that I think is true about kind of celebrity or Twitter versus real life and anything too, though. It's like, you know, it's like people talk all kinds of shit on Twitter, and I've seen this happen where it's like, but when they see the person, barring like the worst of the worst, like the Trumps or whatever's of the world, it's like people always, except for famous people especially, they soften up a lot when they see them in real life. And once they meet them, they usually come away with like, they're not that bad, because people are rarely as bad as we sort of like frame them in the extremist like Twitter world where like everything is good or everything is bad. And again, that to me is what I like about the show. I think it's like, you know, I think it's like there are days where like even the best person fucks up because they're human. And I think that humanity is what they do really, really well.
Indeed. So David Cho, what else did you want to talk about?
You know, I think you guys came out of the episode, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but like it felt like you guys were really characterizing as the kids winning.
Yeah, let me tell you, we'll talk about this in the next episode, but we got a lot of feedback.
Well,
to decodingtv@gmail.com saying you were wrong for thinking that. So
yeah, I mean,
you're not the only one for that rubbed the wrong way.
I mean, it didn't rub me the wrong way as much as I think there is something to say, like that it feels like the kids probably did overpay. I think you make the fair point in the recording that kind of, you know, we don't know how Pierce is run, and we don't know if that price is fair or not. I think there probably are a few things that we do know that like should be used, and honestly are maybe even in your favor. Like if you think about like in season two, they're going to pay $25 billion for it, and now the price is $10 billion. And that does feel like a decent deal, but
it feels like an appropriate come down based on what's happened in the intervening years. Yes.
Yeah. And also like, listen, like I haven't done many deals for $10 billion, but my guess is if you're outbidding your competition by like almost $4 billion, right, it's not great, you know?
Well, one question I had for you, David Cho, is there, we are shown a bidding war in the show. And I am curious how true to life you felt this bidding war was, not asking you to use any specific names, of course.
I think it's really close. I think the sort of last and final, I think the speed of it obviously is very TV. You know, it's like,
because it happens in like 2 hours, basically, right?
I mean, not even. It feels like they do, like, it feels like they're actually sharing, like, because they're just sitting outside that house.
Yeah. You know, and it feels like almost like real time, almost, basically.
Yeah. And there's two exchanges back and forth. And I think, I think it happened, like, the way they go from 6 to 7 to 8 to 10 is very fast. And, and that's the only thing that I thought was maybe a little inaccurate. But I think, like, you know, if you look at like kind of what happened with Elon and Twitter, it's like that happened very quickly.
I think that was obviously
for a crazy number.
Right. One of the things that might surprise people who are watching who haven't participated in a deal like this is the numbers they're throwing out feel pretty irrational. There's a point when the finance guy tells us the question is asked, you know, is it worth $10 billion? And he's like, it's worth whatever someone's willing to pay for it, which is completely true.
Well, you know, like, I think that also, though, and they do a good job of sort of positioning him as a banker, where they're kind of like, he obviously, all he's doing is like, he's the broker in the deal. So the bigger the deal is, the more money he makes. Like, he's incentivized for the deal to be as high as possible.
Right.
Because his carry ends up being higher. But like, I think,
what is carry, for those who don't know that term?
It's essentially what his take home is as the financier on the deal. And that's a very bad explanation of what carry is. But in this context, it's probably good enough.
Yeah. So, but I think like what it feels, one other aspect that feels true to life, other than the kind of gamesmanship and bidding war, is the idea that there's not like complicated financial models going on in between bids, right? It's largely based on kind of personality and ego. And
you've kind of done all your work before that point starts, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of diligence that goes into, here's what our floor is, here's what our ceiling is. And I think like in this case, and I think, the whole thing is sort of a microcosm for who the kids are, right? It's like each Roy kid and them collectively together always sort of do 85% of a good job. It's like they get to Nan, they talk her into taking the bid, they sort of like start negotiating with her, and then in the last 15% they just really fuck it up, you know. And you see that time and time again with like Kendall, like, and how his multiple like sort of like takeover attempts went. You saw that with Shiv, you saw that with Roman. It's like it's the continuous sort of like cycle that they're operating in. And to me, it's like the show sort of undermines them from the very beginning based on sort of like the way they're pitching the 100. You know, I think the 100 is meant to sound like a horrible idea. Like,
yeah, that was another
masterclass to economist meets New Yorker is like literally nothing.
That was going to be my other question, which was, you have run or you have been the publisher of major publications. But I was curious, you know, how appealing does Substack meets Masterclass meets The Economist meets The New Yorker? How does that sound to you?
I mean, I think I think they were making the Huffington Post. You know, it's like they're sort of saying like they were trying to get like, I think a lot of the language is really good, but again, it just paints them as fucking idiots, right? Like, high calorie info snacks or parcels, ethos of a nonprofit but with crazy margins is like, I mean, all this stuff is just like, it's comical because it's so bad, but it's also sort of like, it's very much what you do when you're fundraising. You have to kind of present, you know, the best case scenario, but it doesn't sound that good to me. I mean, how did you think it? You also are a media veteran.
I think it's supposed to be like a parody of what a media pitch would be. You know, that's kind of was my impression of it. So
I wish we could have found out how much they were raising. That was the real question I was curious about. Like, because it's like they're taking Saudi money. So my guess is, you know, they're probably raising those guys aren't getting out of bed for, you know, sort of a typical friends and family or angel investment. And you look at like Semaphore or something like that. I think they raised, what, 15 at the beginning? And even that feels low for what these guys are probably trying to do based on the financiers they brought in.
Semaphore would be another recent media organization that raised some money. Puck
I think
News.
Semaphore is presented as Substack meets Masterclass meets the New Yorker in a way. As far as like the Pierce deal goes, I thought there were a few other things that I thought were interesting to bring to you. One is like, you sort of make the comp that it's the journal. And I think the way the conversations happen between like Rupert and the bank office is similar, but I think there's probably, they present it as a lot more political than the journal is, you know, because, and I think that's the New York Times of it all. because it's like they're like, we're on the front lines of Germany when whatever.
Yeah. So you're saying that the Pierce organization feels more like New York Times to you than
I think it's both. Yeah. Right. I think it's like they're using the structure that like and they were both family run businesses.
That's a good call. I mean, in the past, what the show has done is they have kind of combined a lot of different things. So like there's very few organizations that actually have like amusement parks and also make video game consoles, apparently, is something we learn about them in season
and
2.
And cruise ships.
You know, and cruise ships. Yeah, yeah. So it's just kind of like, it's not like a precise analog for an existing company today. But I take your point that New York Times is also another great
And it's like
analog for the Pierce organization. Yeah.
Also, like their family, it truly is a family business where like every single like senior leadership, non-editorial position is one, but with a family member as well. But to that point, like I was actually because I was curious, I looked up the market cap for the Times and the market cap for Fox News. Do you happen to know what they are? Because I was surprised by what
I don't
was.
Hit me. I don't hit me.
Give me a guess for the Times.
The Times. I'm gonna guess 60 billion.
6 billion.
Oh, I was way off.
And I will say the Times is probably one of the best run newspapers from a business perspective,
right?
You know, that's out there. It's like they are the model for how to make a subscription digital publication like operate.
And so that's significantly less than the 10 billion that was bid for Pierce in the show.
Yeah. So yeah. That to me, I do think is a real clue as to whether or not they overpaid. Because like Logan comes in at like 7 and he's like, or he's like anchored to 7 and then let's start at 6 and say we didn't like something.
Yeah. So they paid basically $4 billion more than the New York Times is worth at this point. Yeah.
What do you think Fox News is? Because Fox News was spun out of when the Disney sale happened. Like, what do you think Fox News' market cap
is? I'll say 12 billion.
17 billion.
Mm.
And obviously TV math is really different because the way cable deals work and things like that. But it's like, it's pretty interesting because I think like the business analogs are probably pretty similar. And so, yeah, I mean, my guess is the deal that the kids did probably wasn't that good.
Yeah, we have gotten a lot of that feedback from people that we will discuss on the next episode. But yeah, a lot of people are like, I think you guys misread whether they should have been celebrating or not. I think, but here's the thing, David Cho, and we'll talk about this on the next episode as well. It's like, regardless of whether it was a good deal or not, they got to have a brief moment of triumph, even if it was just emotional and not business-wise. You know,
the other thing about that was like when you talked about the camera move on Shiv and like the fist bump outside, like that's so not how Succession celebrates things. Mm-hmm. You know, like when Logan like avoids the proxy battle with Stewie and them, it's like, you know, it's like it's always they go straight to business. It's like the celebration in itself kind of was like very like eyebrow raising to me.
Because it felt very uncharacteristic of the show.
Well, just because it was like they rarely do like a true celebration. You know, it's like it's really like nothing good ever happens.
Nothing good ever happens. So they rarely have any opportunity to celebrate. And that's why a lot of people were like, it's probably going to turn out being bad or it's probably not going to happen. Like the deal will be unwound in some way because it would be out of character of Succession for the kids to actually succeed at anything.
This is jumping ahead in the outline a little bit, but I think it also speaks to kind of like, to me, I think the ending with Logan watching ATN, and I think you might have missed this, is that, so the way the Gojo deal is structured is they're spinning off ATN and that's what Logan's going to run now. Mm-hmm. So when Logan is the CEO, like once the Gojo deal goes through, it's like he's running, it's similar to the Disney Fox
sale. So he will have a small... he will run a small portion of his previous kingdom, basically. Yeah.
To me, I think they might be spinning out altogether. Like it might not be part of the company. Like, because like Fox News is now its own separate entity.
Yeah.
But to me, I think what they're setting up really is like you have a guy who's alone who is like kind of back to where he started. Like he's doing the news and he's going up against his kids who clearly have bought the rival sort of news outlet with a major election looming.
Yeah. You know? Gotcha. Gotcha. And the that other is thing, a good correction. Yeah.
The only other thing that I thought was a good reference, that was an important reference for why the deal might be bad, and people probably emailed about this as well, is the fact that like I think Shiv might have really over leveraged herself because it sounds like they're putting up a lot of the cash for this themselves. Because they talk about like we're each gonna get 2 to 3 out of the deal. That means combined we have 9, so we can probably move up to 10. And they call it their entire nut. And Shiv, if she's about to go through a divorce, probably means like And even with the prenup, she's probably going to lose some value of what she has. And so
that, interesting. That was not my interpretation of that conversation. I thought they were going to get $2 to $3 billion total, by the way.
Oh, no, no. That I was think my... they're 5% each. I think gets them $2 to $3 billion
each.
Maybe I could be wrong. I thought it was each. And then like, to me, it's like you do some.
I thought it was $2 to $3 billion total because there is uncertainty about whether or not they can actually get to 10. And so I assume that a lot of that money, a lot of the 10 was coming in from outside of the three of them. But could be wrong. I assume we'll find out more about who else is in the deal in subsequent episodes.
But to me, so. I think they're setting up something where all of the kids might end up kind of broke because Connor also is positioned to sort of like potentially be over leveraging himself.
Yeah.
Because it's oh, go ahead.
And just for people who aren't super into business terms, leveraging in this context.
Over leveraging themselves means they're spending more money than they have.
Yes.
So it's like if they end up committing X amount to the deal, then they're going to need Y amount to live the life they live, which is very expensive because they're taking private planes everywhere. And so, you know, to make that happen, it's just like they might be, you know, I think it's an interesting way to position it where if they're broke and Logan still is really rich, like what are the dynamics in play there? And I haven't seen the bigger trailer and I haven't seen the previews of the next on, but
yeah, but those are all good things to look out for. I think those are potential mines that may explode on them over the course of the next few weeks for sure. So
the other two things within the deal that I wanted to defend was one, I think you're fair to Roman, but I feel like one of the listeners and Kim were maybe a little less generous to Roman, sort of like his progression and what's happened over the last two seasons. Cause like I think they talk about how each season is sort of centered around one of the kids potentially getting a shot. And like season one is about Kendall getting a shot. Season two is about Shiv getting a shot. And then season three is like Roman's season. But, you know, Roman has like a really good season two when, you know, he's the one that goes and gets sort of that financing from the Saudi people and then has that whole thing at the Four Seasons. But then they kind of like give him a massive win because like when they're on the yacht, everyone like, you know, all the finance guys are sort of like, oh, he did a great job. He got the deal done. And Roman's sort of like, you know, I kind of didn't. It wasn't there. And if it was there, I would have known and blah, 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 blah. And all that to say, it's like Roman clearly is a lot more savvier than he looks. And in the third season, he's the one that does the Gojo deal. You know, it's like he's the one that gets Mattson to that point and sort of like proves himself to not be a fuck up. And I don't mean this to say in like a dark way, but it's like I think Kieran Culkin's energy and then also like the fact that the dick pic thing was like the thing that took him down, it's like that obviously is reprehensible from like a moral perspective, but from like a business perspective, it's like, you know, sending a dick pic to Jerry is like not the worst thing he could do. You know what I mean? Like it's like he clearly is showing himself to be capable from a replacement Logan perspective.
I mean, it's pretty bad. Let's just be clear about that.
Just be clear. I'm saying don't ever do that. That's horrible.
Yes.
But like, you know, but like within the context of like what the Roy kids have done.
Yes. Yes.
It's not as bad as like,
he's not as bad as like helping to kill a person. For
correct. And yes, it's like, he also isn't like overplaying his business hand. He's just doing something really dumb and immature that is again, not okay at all. And no one should do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Roman's evolution has been really interesting throughout the series. Maybe a little bit fast-forwarded for my taste, but overall, the show has done a good job of plausibly transitioning him from a complete fuck-up with no skills to an actual credible contender. And he is,
at this point, he's masturbating against a window. You know what I mean? It's like, he literally brings nothing to the table.
And at this point, he is probably the most serious minded among them, honestly. Like he's the only one of the three kids that is unswayed by emotional entanglements.
He does one really good thing when Nan is trying to work them, where she's like talking about the bid she's gotten. And it's like, everyone's saying all these numbers, like 8, 9, what comes after 9? And it's like, you know, to go to B instead of 10 is a really savvy move, I thought. Like I was like, oh, this is a testament to this guy like actually being good at the deal-making part of it.
I thought all the kids handled that deal section really well. Like Kendall being like, should we just say a number? You know,
they were good like, up until they actually had to give the bids. It's like,
and then you thought the bids were a little bit too,
I mean, you saw over leveraged.
Yeah.
Again, it's like if you're overbidding by $4 billion, it's like you kind of fucked up. You know, I can't stress mm-hmm. that enough. Mm-hmm. The other person I wanted to defend in the entire thing, I think, like, you seem kind of like down on Nan, and you might not be, you might just be down on Nan the person, but I think as a business person, she's like kind of working all sides of it extremely well.
I think that's true. I think that's true. I think that honestly, it was a former Sweet Smell of Succession co-host Tara Ariano that really turned me off, like really pointed out the ways in which Nan is a phony, you know, to me. And
well, she's definitely a phony, but I think it's like that's kind of what makes her good. You know what I mean? It's like the fact, like all of the folksiness is complete bullshit.
Yes.
Right. It's like, yes. And I, you know, I've known some executives who have that trait where it's like they'll lean into their Southern accent or something like that because it always helps them get a deal done. And like, you know, to me, those theatrics are as much of the deal as like the sort of like diligence you end up doing with your team in advance.
Let me put this out there. So when I'm talking about phoniness, you know, all the stuff about like, I have a headache. Oh, I'm just so disgusted.
Oh, no, the migraine is an amazing.
No. Let me finish my sentence. So, you know, she's all this phoniness of like, I have a migraine, you know, oh, all this bidding war stuff is, I just find it terrible. I don't like this at all. And, you know, I don't even, what's your financing like? Not that I understand any of it, blah, blah, blah. You know, like all those things, right? Let me put this out there, Dave Cho, an alternate version of Nan who is able to do those things without explicitly coming off like she's full of shit. You know what I'm saying? Like where, like in, when you, she's saying all those stuff, I, as the viewer, and I assume the Roys know that she is completely BSing, right? Isn't there a way for someone to conduct themselves where they're like still getting the job done, but they're not as obviously a phony person? You know what I'm saying? Like I guess that's kind of what I was, maybe that doesn't exist. I'm just
I
imagining
think probably,
a fantasy
but
person,
it's hard to like criticize her when she gets the,
she does get
like,
the job
she
done.
Doubles she the get, deal that she probably yeah. would have gotten. You know, it's
she
like
she does get the job done. So
if there was, if that hadn't happened, it's like she's getting $6 billion. You know, yeah. maybe seven. Like
yeah.
if they're anchored at seven, it's like she's not getting more than that. And mm-hmm. like to me, I think that's sort of like it's also great revenge when you consider. And obviously, she lost like you know the difference of $14 billion when she didn't do the other deal. But it's like you know
15, I believe actually
15.
I think
yeah,
like, Logan had gone up to 25 at the end there. Yeah,
but it's like you know when Logan kind of beats her at Turnhaven because she wants to control Shiv becoming the next CEO or whatever.
Yes.
And then, you know, for her to then sort of like fuck him over and the kids over. I mean, it's like, it's a pretty good win for Nan.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I bet she wishes she had taken the deal now, you know? But
I really want to know what happened in Maine. She's like, mm-hmm. you know, it happened with one of the cousins in Maine. I was like, damn, tell me more about that.
I mean, I love Succession dropping those references all the time, you know, like, when it will be like it will make all these allusions to other things, and it's like really good at making like allusions to other things where like for instance like I think Frank and Carl are having a conversation and he'll say like they gave this whole list of things that went wrong, like you know the troubles in Argentina, you know the death of so and so, like they gave this whole list of ambiguous things that you never see in the show.
It's really good world building.
Yeah,
like they agreed, just make agreed. It feel like so many things have happened and yeah. like and it feels very lived in. It's great.
Yeah.
But agreed, yeah, so I guess agreed. I just wanted to defend Nan because I thought she did a really good job. And
yeah,
you guys
yeah,
might have
right.
been
she,
a little
she
hard
did
on
get
her.
The job. She did expertly get the job done. I felt like she could have done it in a, you know, David Cho, I try to be upfront with people. You know, I try to be direct with people. And I think it's possible to do what she accomplished while still being direct, but maybe it's not. I mean, you would
I mean,
know more than
know,
me.
Man. It's like if you get the money and you get the petty wins, like that to me feels like a massive, like that to me feels like you're taking it all home.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Consider Nan defended. So, yeah.
So then I think the Shiv and Tom side of things, I think there's nothing really like, I agreed with everything you guys are saying. I think you blame Tom that the Pierce deal was kind of like fucked up by Tom. I don't think that's the case. I just want to give a big LMAO to Wendkiv thought Logan had killed Tom. I love that energy. like mm-hmm. I like that fear. It feels like I like what that's bringing to the table.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There was one detail that I pointed out to you on text that I think it's important to bring up is that Shiv not having any luggage was maybe one of my favorite things. That they sort of like subtly there's a story about how sort of like non-ostentatious luxury is kind of like the real luxury when it's all said and done. And I think it's like it's such a good detail that someone can come back from a trip and just have like their handbag because someone has already arranged for all the luggage to either come back, or they have multiple sets of things at different homes. And it's just like, it's a really nice detail that I think speaks to kind of the understanding of Uber wealth, as it were.
A couple things about handbags and that kind of thing that I, you know, I know nothing about handbags. My wife,
you're talking about Bridget?
my wife does know. Like, yeah, apparently they chose like the largest handbag that someone might think would be acceptable for Bridget. Whereas at those events, typically everyone has a tiny handbag. Like you can basically fit your phone in it and that's it, you know, like, and so for Bridget at the succession part, at the, Logan Roy birthday party, she had like an ostentatiously ridiculously large handbag.
It's a tough look
handbag.
For Burberry too. You know, it's like a brand that's really going through a rebrand. They have an incredible creative director.
I didn't know if it was Burberry, but anyway,
it's so, Burberry, and like it's a massive L for them in that instance. Hate to see it.
I made a TikTok about how one of my favorite things about Succession is the helicopter acting, and what I meant by that is anytime the people are near helicopters, they treat it like it's no big deal, you know? And if you notice, anytime they're walking out, like if I go near a helicopter, I'm like in awe of it. I'm like, my mind is freaking out. I'm trying not to get killed by the rotor.
It's very scary.
But these people, they have been around helicopters their entire lives. So anytime they're walking out, they don't even pay attention to the helicopter. And somebody commented on that TikTok at tiktok.com/@DaveChensky and pointed out that actually they don't wear coats either. And they pointed to this Esquire interview with Kieran Culkin about how it's very rare that they'll wear coats. And the reason for that is because they don't need coats.
Yeah.
Because either the helicopter or the private driver will just take them to the actual location they
true,
need to go.
True wealth is everywhere you go, 70 degrees. And like you don't ever need any, like it's like that is, you know, you really don't ever need a jacket. And I think it's a testament to comfort and convenience.
You're not exposed to the elements for long enough to need them, basically. It's very rare that you see any of the characters wearing a coat on the show. So, and yeah, good call out, David Cho, about like true luxury is everything being 70 degrees. That's a great way of thinking about it.
Not the first time I've said that sentence, Dave.
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
The other thing that I thought was really interesting that I didn't hear you guys mention was like, there's a really weird moment where Tom says, I could see if I could make love to you. And it feels really kind of like borderline sex workery. And then Shiv responds with, would you like to? And he goes, no. That kind of just felt, I was just like, oh, that is so, in a dark relationship, they somehow made it darker. And I was just like, kind of like intrigued by that.
My interpretation of it was more like, once more for old time's sake. You know, I didn't think of it as
there's
like
something about
dark.
The phrasing. I could see if I could make love to you is so like
weird.
Performative.
It's a weird like, phrasing. Yeah.
Would you like, you know, it's like,
but
one
you're
more
talking
time
to someone,
road.
David Cho, you're talking to someone who has weird phrasing for lots of things. So I was like, that's a plausible thing that someone would say in that situation, you know? So, but yes, I agree. It's a little bit odd. It's a little bit odd. So
I think, all I have left are a bunch of random thoughts that
hit me with your random thoughts, David Cho. Hit me with your random thoughts.
I thought the Bernie Madoff kids thing by the listener was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, because I thought Kendall died in season 3. Because, that episode, the penultimate episode where he, like, falls off the thing is also the week that New Yorker profile came out, which is exactly what you would do if your character died. Like, otherwise, you would save it for the week after when the finale happens. But for it to happen after season, like, episode 9 was just a really interesting move. So that was that. I thought Telus as a banker was really well done.
Yes.
Frankly, like agreed. I think T is a really good character and is represent like he's a good sort of like younger Laird, you know what I mean? Like they have the same energy because they have the same job.
Well, you have worked with bankers before. Like, what are some characteristics in Telus that you see as resembling what your experience has been?
I don't feel comfortable begrudging the bankers I've worked with.
Let's just say positive experiences, David Cho. It doesn't need
I
to
think
be negative.
They are people who are very ready to get the deal done, and they're very good at what they do. And I think Telus represents them accurately. And when sort of, I think.
Yeah, how about you? You say he represents them accurately, and I will describe characteristics.
I think the way Roman sort of is like, oh, are you counting your? Are you looking through the yacht catalog already? Sort of is the the right energy of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch the show with captions on? By the way,
Yes.
Did you think it was weird that everyone's calling Logan Logue, L-O-G-E? Because that threw me off a lot. They kept calling him Logue.
No, I didn't have a problem with that. But that seems that seemed fine to me. Yeah.
I thought the designs for the hundreds was exceptionally bad. And I thought that was the most unrealistic thing. Because it's like the agency you're hiring would not be that bad to me.
Wow. Harsh.
It was just, it was really bad.
Harsh also, words for the fake agency that made the 100.
Well, here's the thing. HBO designs. Does such a good job with fake assets, too. It just felt like, maybe that was kind of the point. Like, they probably gave maybe horrible direction, and that's why it was so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Don't slag off the agency. It was bad. Yeah. It was a bad client, David Cho. That was.
I usually think it is the client that's bad, and I have been the client before, and oftentimes we were the problem. I thought the fact that they didn't do diligence on the business was maybe the most accurate and most ridiculous thing. The fact
you
that
do
they kind
diligence
of
diligence on what Pierce or
yeah,
what,
that they're yeah. just like going in there. They like make the decision that day. They fly down there.
Yeah.
And then at that moment, like, and I believe they can secure the money, but it's like, you know, the fact that the reason you don't know if Pierce is a good deal or not is because they've never talked about it. Like, there's never been any sort of like, well, how does this actually work? Because like when they were doing the Pierce deal for ATN, it was like, well, there's synergies or all these things that can make this make sense. You know, now they're just buying it.
Is Pierce going to be part of the 100? Is it going to be? No. Are they
the
just buying
dead,
Pierce?
Dave.
Are they just buying Pierce and taking over it? You know, like what's going on? But so you're saying that part is relatively realistic or unrealistic? Or
I think it's both realistic and ridiculous. You know what I mean? It's like those things do happen fast, obviously not that fast again, but it is kind of like, I think one of the things I guess I should have said when I was talking about like rich people are humans too, is that, you know, I've worked for a lot of big companies and worked with a lot of like kind of famous people where you would think like, oh, a decision they made must have been done with this incredible committee and brain trust and whatever. And it's like a lot of times it's just human beings being humans. You know, and it's when you can't understand logically why something's happening, it usually means there's just like a human being an emotional human at the other end of it, not being like overly emotional, but more just like a human being that's affected by, you know, their own wants and desires and things like that. It's like, you know, why would Elon Musk pay way more than the ticker price for a company when it's about to do a massive round of layoffs anyways, right before their quarterly earnings report? It's like, you know,
I will say like he did the same level of due diligence as the Roy kids did on Pierce, you know?
Yeah, he did more.
I don't know.
And
about
he
that.
Still fucked it. I don't know. Look at the text. It was pretty bad and he did do it. The only other two things I thought were really good was when Colin says he has to go through her phone. And I've seen that happen with like I once saw a female, like global pop star force her security to go through someone's phone and make them delete and then go to the trash file and delete the files then too.
That's smart because you don't just can't delete it. You gotta
you can't just delete it off
you gotta
the
go
screen.
To recently deleted and then completely purify it from there. So you have seen that happen before.
Oh yeah, I've seen that happen before and I know it happens many times
and that's gotta be really awkward too. That's gotta be like an awkward situation potentially, right?
But like if you're a security guy, you're scary and like and you it's not awkward because you're just scared the entire time.
Do you think Colin is appropriately scary for a security person?
Yeah, I think he's fucking terrifying. Okay. I think, and also it's like the dynamic with Logan is really good where it's like he's not scary in front of Logan, but of every other time you've ever seen Colin, because it's always within the context of like Kendall killing the kid or something like that, and it's just like that is exactly like I remember there was one security person that I dealt with that was like a former MI6 person who had like I know has killed many people. And like I crossed him one time and he was just like
you crossed him like you
I just made
him?
A mistake. I was late to something that I shouldn't be late to. Uh-huh. And he was like, you caused us to, and he was just like and this is someone I'm friends with. And he's like, he just railed into me. I was like, oh shit.
Oh. Okay. Like he physically apprehended.
No, not physically, but it was like the intimidation energy was get scared that often. And I was like, well, fuck. The last thing that I liked was I really liked the wheels on the car that they took to Nan's house. It was it was like spinner wheels that made it look like the wheels weren't moving. And I just thought that was a really nice touch because they're definitely renting those cars from like that. It's the most unrealistic touch, honestly, because it's like they're renting those cars. Like who the fuck knows where Nan lives in California? But it's like I doubt that's like factory on the car service company they use. And so it was one
step
too far, but I liked it.
They requested
custom. That would never happen. It's like you're getting a fucking normal Escalade. You're getting a normal, whatever, Tahoe. And it's like, it's not going to have those wheels, but I was just like, damn, that does look cool.
Just because
they
had to go quickly, right, to that place that wouldn't have happened in real life.
Yeah, but they didn't schedule that a week out. It was those cars that day.
Yeah.
Even getting that number of SUVs together is like can be hard day of.
Yeah.
Depending on where you are, if you're not in like a major city.
I heard that the house that they kind of were dealing in, you know, the Roy kids were at before they go to Nan's, was owned by a 26-year-old, I think, like a 26-year-old multimillionaire.
Did they say where it was? It kind of looked like Bel Air, like Palisades-y.
Yeah. Okay. So here are some details.
I haven't read any. I kind of had a busy day and I didn't read anything about it.
It is an $83 million property that was sold in 2021. And it was sold to a 26-year-old crypto billionaire.
Damn.
Which one? Let's see. You know all the 26-year-old crypto billionaires?
I know a few.
Austin Russell. The 26-year-old tech wonderkin.
Is he the chain analysis guy?
26-year-old tech wonderkin who is CEO and founder of the self-driving car automation pioneer Luminar.
Oh. So
he apparently acquired the $83 million Palisades house that serves as the Roy kids.
Yeah, it looks like the Palisades.
Yeah, it's a Pacific Palisades. So it's probably like the, you know, third cheapest house in that neighborhood is my guess. Based on what I've seen in the Palisades.
A lot.
Yeah, no,
it's definitely not worth that right now.
I don't know. I can't speak to it. Can't speak to it. But yeah, couple years ago, it was sold for that much. So,
was there anything else good that happened in the news? Because I haven't seen any of the stuff since the episode aired.
No, other than that house being unmasked and the Bridget's bag being commented on, I didn't see too much else. But of course, people can always email in what they want us to talk about at decodingtv@gmail.com. So anyway, David Cho, anything else or shall we wrap it up for today? I hope people have enjoyed this glimpse into the lives of the media elite that David Cho has provided.
Oh, stop. That's not, no. I've been around some stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. I wasn't implying that you are part of them.
I'm not a media elite.
You certainly walked amongst them. You've walked amongst them.
I have walked amongst them.
You've walked amongst them. Well, anyway, David Cho, in addition to being a trusted advisor and strategist to many media companies, also co-hosts a podcast with me called Dave on Dave, which you can get at my personal Patreon page, patreon.com/DaveChen. And if you like the vibe of our conversation right now, you'll probably enjoy Dave on Dave over at patreon.com/DaveChen. But if we record more bonus episodes, which I hope we will and am planning for us to do, decodingtv.com is where you can become a paid member and get the rest of our comparisons with what Succession's doing this season with what actually goes on in real life in the lives of the rich and famous. David Cho, thanks so much for chatting with me today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.